Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, helping clients find out how to protect any valuable asset from stamp or teacup collections to houses, boats of all sizes, and everything in between. Plenty of information from the local agents is available at Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, 772-3858.
Are you with us on the phone, Kurt?
Yes, I am, Mark.
Okay. We're expecting one other person to call in, maybe. We'll see if he's there when we get to item three.
Okay,
so will the clerk...
Is
this Mike Trefalis?
Yes, it is.
Okay, we're going to do the voluntary pledge after the roll call, and then we'll get to the informational presentation. Thanks. Will the clerk call the roll, please?
Sue.
Here.
John Heberle?
Yes.
John Hole?
Here.
Kurt?
Present.
Nancy?
Yes.
Cindy?
Here.
And Mark?
Here. Okay, and it's now time for the voluntary pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we're going to have an informational presentation on the CAKE Access Intertie Projects. With us this evening in the chambers is Andy Hughes, Alaska Department of Transportation, Mark Shinman, SEPA's manager for the Intertie Project, Jason Anderson and Tom Parker from the Forest Service, as well as Mike Trefalis from Federal Highways, and he's on the phone. Are you still with us, Mike?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and... I think what we'll do is start off with maybe an explanation from Jason Anderson and yourself on the federal side of things. So, if you
Mike,
please.
Can we kind of stand up at the podium?
So,
I'm going to go ahead and do it from here since it might be hard to hear you from the phone.
Jason, can I say one more thing? This all came about, but just I think there's some confusion with all the interaction between all the agencies, and I thought if we could get everybody together in one sitting and just give a presentation without questions from the public, it might clarify things a little bit. So I think if any assembly members have any questions on the status of things, they should feel free to chime in, but we'll keep it just to that for questions at this point. So, okay, Jason, thanks.
So my hope was just to really kind of lay out where the federal involvement is on both of the two projects, and maybe first and foremost try to address what comes up commonly about whether or not the two projects are connected. You have both looking at a similar corridor as well as other alternative routes. So just to sort of set the stage for more technical questions of the individuals like from Mike from Fed Highways or Mark from Commonwealth Associates, I just wanted to lay out sort of the groundwork for the environmental analyses that are happening now. You've got two separate projects in the form of the CAKE to Petersburg Intertie, that's the electrical transmission line. You've also got a separate project in the form of the CAKE Access, the Federal Highways proposal. They have different underlying purpose and needs. One is to provide reduced cost power to the community of CAKE. The other is to improve transportation opportunities between or to the community of CAKE. Those two separate underlying purpose and need, when you look at the federal regulations for implementing NEPA, in other words, the translation about how to comply with that law, it talks about three reasons why you would connect an action into a single environmental impact statement. Those reasons are, one, if one action triggers the other, two, if one action cannot proceed unless the other action is taken previously or simultaneously, or three, if both actions are interdependent parts of a larger action and depend on that larger action to move forward. As our discussions occurred around the table with Federal Highways, the Commonwealth, the proponents of SEPA, as well as the State Highway Department of Transportation. Sorry, I was scratching my throat.
I think glow is going to get you a drink of water.
Some water.
Jason, cough drop?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Perfect timing. So as we had a discussion, what we concluded is that none of those three provisions have been really triggered with the two projects, even though they share that similar northern corridor, which is in our forest plan.
Oh, thank you.
We have a transportation utility land use designation across the north end of the island, which is specifically for utility and transportation systems. But that's just one particular alternative, and the forest plan does not dictate that it has to be used for either of the two projects. So from a connectedness standpoint, I think we've met the test that the two actions are not connected based upon those different underlying purpose and needs, the direction and the implementing regulations. From there, there's a whole list of questions about coordination between the projects. Certainly the two projects are, and the analyses are going to have to be communicating at some point in time to deal with the indirect effects and potential cumulative effects of having two actions going forward in the near time, you know, sometime in the next 3 to 5 years, actually implementing actions on the ground. So there's going to be that discussion in the analyses. There's a great Q&A that Mike had put together. I don't know if Mike, if you want to add anything more to the presentation at this point from a connectedness and relationship standpoint.
No.
The Q&A is in the back. I think Andy brought about 40 copies. Really useful information for understanding the relationship between the two projects. As the analyses carry forward, both, you know, with right now the Cape to Petersburg Intertie project is sort of out of the gates first. As those analyses become, you know, closer to drafts and eventually final environmental impact statements, you'll have a lot more technical data about the project's design, costs, environmental impacts, economic impacts, etc. So,
all right. Any questions from the assembly of Jason?
Has the Forest Service already decided that they're going to support the northern route? I got the impression that.
Well, thank you. I'll answer that in a. No, our decision hasn't come forward on which one we'll support. Really what it comes down to is we've already concluded in our forest plan that that is an acceptable location, that land use designation is an acceptable location for utility and transportation systems. The forest supervisor's role in these two projects for the Cape to Petersburg Intertie project is to issue a special use or, be a special use permit or an easement to SEPA for the installation of that line. So ultimately it's a decision about land use and where that land use would occur. So the alternative, looking at both the corridor to the north, the south central route, and other alternatives that the proponent is developing, the forest supervisor will ultimately have to weigh in on which alternative he feels most comfortable picking in terms of how it meets the purpose and need of reducing the power or the cost of power to CAKE. So as far as which decision he'll pick, it's ultimately going to come down to the final environmental impact statement, public comment, and the ability of the project to meet that particular expressed need. Did that answer your question?
Okay. Any other questions?
I do have one other question, and I'm looking at the total project snapshot report, which is from the state legislature in 2012, and they made a sort of a checklist of which agency could take the lead on which projects. And it looked like at that time that the anticipation was that Federal Highway and the Forest Service and state highways would all be partners in this project. Why did you choose not to go in that direction?
For the CAKE Access project, I believe that is actually the case. We are signing on as a cooperating agency to the Federal Highways Administration-led environmental impact statement. The express nature of the relationship with the state is less clear to me. Yeah, on the CAKE Access.
On the CAKE Access project. Step to the microphone, please, Andy, and state your name and who you represent.
Andy Hughes, Alaska DOT, Southeast Region Planning. The snapshot document that's referred to here is the legislative backup document for the appropriation of $40 billion. And that document, besides identifying the purpose of the project and the potential justification for the project, it also identified several alternatives as to how you could go forward to proceed through the environmental process. And One of the assumptions was, well, if you know, folks felt if you didn't use any federal aid and you stayed on the either one of the two easements that were conveyed already to the department, they're referred to as 4407 easements, as long as the department stayed within those easements, that we possibly could avoid NEPA, a federal NEPA action. However, folks that were thinking along those terms was overlooking the fact that there was still a remaining federal action, and that would be the need to get a Army Corps of Engineers wetland permit. And so in the case of constructing a road in Southeast, generally in the Tongass National Forest, we usually have several federal actions, one of them being the wetlands permit, another one being an easement through the forest, and the last one, usually we use federal aid in constructing most of our road facilities. So in this case, we evaluated the three different courses of action, whether we went with the Army Corps of Engineers as the lead agency, the Forest Service as the lead agency, or Federal Highways as the lead agency. And we chose to use some federal aid, highway aid, to get us through the NEPA process. We're actually leveraging the $40 million with federal highway dollars as well. And so Federal Highways is the lead agency in this case. Cooperating agencies are the Army Corps of Engineers and the Forest Service. So all three agencies are involved in this EIS.
Does that answer your
question? It does. It still seems like it's an expensive way to, because you're ending up running two separate processes instead of doing it as one project, but that's the agencies for to decide.
Okay, any more questions of Fed Highways or U.S. Forest Service or DOT?
Yes.
Okay, I guess if there's no more presentation from those three entities, we'll have Mark Shinman from Commonwealth give an overview of the intertie. This is the information that was presented as well at the CAKE Petersburg Intertie Steering Committee meeting in CAKE a week or so ago, I believe, isn't it?
Correct,
yeah.
Yes, my name is Mark Shinman. I'm with Commonwealth Associates, and I'm representing SEPA. I'm their project manager for the CAKE Petersburg Intertie. I want to just take a few minutes to talk about the project itself, give you a little bit of information about it, and kind of talk you through it. There should be handouts available with copies of these slides. I think they're on the table, so they should be available for everybody. There is a definite need for the intertie. CAKE is an isolated electric system. Their only source of electricity is diesel power. They have no hydro. They're a small entity. I think their population is about 550 people. But with just diesel for their source of power, their electric rates are really high. They're about 60 cents a kilowatt hour. It just really hurts their economy. We had a meeting there a week ago that the mayor mentioned. When we walked into town, we walked into the meeting place, and it was a huge gymnasium, and there's one light on. And the rest of the lights, they didn't turn on because of the cost of electricity. And we were early enough, we were helping them set up chairs and things. We were going into this room, and all the tables, all the chairs were in this room, and I had to use my cell phone to be able to see. But apparently the people in CAKE are used to going around in the dark. And it's all because of the price of electricity. They really need some low-cost power. We have about $5 million of funding available for the intertie. That's enough money to get it designed, to get it construction ready. It is not enough money to build it. This money is from two grants that came from AEA. So we do have enough money to get it construction ready, and we're working in that direction. We've made a lot of progress. There's been an MOU signed by SEPA, AEA, and IPEC, which is the local utility in CAKE. It basically provides that SEPA will agree to own the intertie. They'll own it, they'll build it, and they'll operate it. provided that there's enough funding available to get the work done. There's an MOU between Metlakatla and CAKE that has to do with hydropower, which will be part of the source of low-cost power for CAKE. There's been a project management office established. That's us to coordinate all the aspects and get it moving. The environmental impact statement is underway. Tetra Tech is the consultant doing that. And D. Hiddle is a consulting engineering firm. They basically have done a feasibility study, and they're in the process of updating that. So the project's moving along. The project itself, we're looking at single pole overhead wood pole construction, similar to the picture there. It'll either be 69,000 volts or 138,000 volts. We'll make that decision down the road a little bit. We plan to follow existing Forest Service roads where possible. There'll also be a fiber optic cable installed on these poles, so that will enhance, that'll be used to help operate the transmission line. It'll also enhance the communication some for CAKE. We anticipate a 2 to 3 year construction process. The EIS is underway. There were public scoping meetings in April and May of 2010. We completed the environmental field work in the fall of 2010 and the summer of 2011, and we've submitted draft resource reports to the Forest Service in May and June of 2012. There are a lot of resource reports covering a lot of subjects: wildlife, aquatics, botany, wetlands, et cetera, et cetera. The Forest Service reviewed those reports and provided us comments, and we've worked with the Forest Service and dealt with our comments. We've continued to move forward. We've drafted chapters 1 and 2 of the draft EIS. That's the purpose and need and the alternatives. We submitted those to the Forest Service, and we got some comments back. Their comments were really in four areas. They said regarding Petersburg Creek, they suggested we look at other alternatives. We've had a lot of since I've been on the project, we've had a lot of input from the community about Petersburg Creek. SEEP has had a lot of input, and I think the borough has been involved in that. So we have looked at other alternatives. For roadless areas, inventoried roadless areas, we were originally planning to build rough pioneer roads. The Forest Service has taken a look at that, and they've said no. We can't do that. We have to use what they call shovel trails. So that means we have to use more helicopters for the construction. So we're moving ahead with that as an assumption. The Forest Service also, I think we had like 8 alternatives. The Forest Service said to help the analysis, we need to narrow that down, fewer options, so we've done that. And they asked us to define a proposed action. That doesn't mean that's going to be the solution, but they want a proposed action so they compare that against the other alternatives. So we have defined a proposed action. The route alternatives, I think you're all fairly familiar with. One of the route alternatives we call the center-south route. It's here's Petersburg, here's CAKE up in here. One of the alternatives is the center-south. It goes across Wrangell Narrows, Duncan Canal, and then on up to CAKE. And that's one of our options. We also have the northern route, which leaves Petersburg and goes up north on Kupernef Island and then over to CAKE. And that's in a sense is another option. And but the northern route has got two sub-options, you might want to call it. One option is one we've been looking at all along. Here's Petersburg, here's the airport. We tap into the substation in Petersburg, which is down in here, come south across the southern end of the airport, and go over to the park here, and then lay a submarine cable up to Prowlery Point. That's one option that we're still considering. That's been an option all along. We've developed a new option that we've called our proposed action. We like this option the best at this point in time. And this option would be to put in, come south to the south end of the airport like we were planning on the submarine route, and then put in an underground line in red. It would be an underground 69,000 volt line or 138,000, whatever we decide to do, It would be an underground line along Sandy Beach Boulevard there, and we would underground the existing wires that are already on that road. So everything along there would be underground. We'd go up to Outlook Park, which is about here, and then we would use technology they call directional bore. It's basically a big machine that would bore under Wrangell Narrows, and as they bored it under, bored under there, we'd put in a 10 or 12 inch conduit, something size big enough for the transmission line, for the fiber optics, and also for some distribution should we somebody want electricity on that side. So that's our new option. That's our preferred option. We've dropped the option. We were looking at an option crossing Petersburg Creek and going through Kuprnoff or behind Kuprnoff. We've dropped that. That's not being considered at all now. So basically, as we're moving forward with the EIS, we have four alternatives. Alternative one is no action. Alternative two is the northern route with directional bore. That's our proposed action. Alternative three is the northern route with a submarine cable. Alternative four is the center-south route. So those are the four alternatives that we're looking at as the EIS moves forward. Here's some mileage lengths for the different options. Tells you how long they are, how long some of the water crossings are. I'll let you read that at your leisure. And we're in the process of updating our construction costs too. Our costs were last estimated in 2010. They were done in 2010 dollars. And the project at the earliest would be built in 2015-16. So we're redoing the cost estimates, assuming that many years of inflation. The cost estimates didn't include as much helicopter work as we have to do now with the shovel trails. So the cost estimates are going to go up because of the shovel trails. We've also contacted a lot of the vendors, and vendors have told us that the inflation rate for construction seems to be higher than anything else, but it's actually running 4 to 5% a year. So we've built that into the cost estimates. And the price of the submarine cable for that option has gone up too. We've contacted some of the submarine cable manufacturers, so we've taken a look at all of this and we've redone the cost estimates. These are the current estimates. Alternative two, which is our proposed action, it's about $66 million. And so this is how much money we need to move ahead. This assumes it's already designed. The $5 million for design purposes isn't included in this. So, and these numbers are moving a little bit too. When we were in CAKE last week, it dawned on me that the substation's 5 miles out of town, and nobody, it didn't seem like anybody planned a way to get the power from the substation into town. So we had a gap there. So I talked to IPEC, the local electric utility, and they said they didn't have any money to do it, so we need to include that as a part of our project. So we're looking right now at moving the substation closer to town, so these numbers will go up. I did some back-of-the-envelope calculations, maybe $3 million. The next steps, we're moving forward on the EIS. The chapters 1 and 2 have been redrafted, taking in the last round of Forest Service comments. We've submitted them to the Forest Service for additional comments for Chapters 1 and 2. We're in the process of drafting Chapters 3 and 4, which will be the complete EIS. If the schedule holds, and I'm not sure it's going to because of review processes, but the original plan, if the schedule holds, is we'd have the draft EIS available for public review in October this year. We'd hold public meetings in November of this year. We're planning to have a meeting here in Petersburg and a meeting in CAKE, the two ends of the intertie. And then the final EIS would be published in May of next year. As already has been talked about, we think the intertie is a separate project. And I think Jason talked about a lot of this already. They can proceed independently of one another. They have each has their own specific purpose and needs. The CAKE Access Project and the Intertie Project are considering different alternatives. We have different time schedules, so we definitely agree they should be separate projects. So, any questions?
I do have one question because I have heard over and over again that, and it may be incorrect, so I'm asking you to state it now, that the power line project cannot go forward unless the road project also goes forward.
These are the costs assuming the road does not go forward.
Okay.
The project, the intertie can be built without the road, and these are the costs without the road.
But it will affect the maintenance costs down the line.
Yes.
Okay.
If the road were to go forward on the northern route and we decide, and our EIS process chose the northern route, it would bring these costs down.
Okay.
And it would lower our maintenance costs. But we're doing our EIS and the costs assuming there's no road.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Member Holt?
The alternative for South Central route is cheaper, but you don't prefer that?
We don't. And maybe we're betting on the come. We're thinking that the road will come.
Ah.
But if, you know, but that's, if the road doesn't come along, we may end up going that route. And that's why it's still part of the EIS and still being considered.
Okay. And but does alternative, the South Central route, does that in any way go across Petersburg Creek?
No.
No. That's what I thought.
It'll cross Wrangell's Narrows. Those. To the south a ways, and it shows it's south of the Petersburg substation quite a ways.
Yeah.
Where it will tap into the existing transmission line there, then cross Wrangell Narrow, and then we have to cross Duncan Canal.
And
both of those will be underwater crossings.
Okay, that was okay. Thank you.
We haven't decided if they're going to be submarine cable or a directional bore, but we'll have to get underneath there somehow.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Member Haverleck, do you have a question?
Yes, sir. First, I'd like to thank you for coming and talking to us about this.
Thank
really
you for having us.
And it does make a lot clearer. And I do have a lot of questions, you know, and not all of them go to you. The road just seems like an impossibility because of the cost, and we don't have anyone paying for the ferry service to get from here to the road. And I really appreciate Senator Stedman, who got us the $40 million for the road, because I know state transportation wants to go small ferries road, you know, just to connect all southeast rather than having these big guys going around. So I know he was looking out for us doing that, but you know, with the road, it keeps going up in cost, the northern route, and I know it helped you out, but we don't have a ferry to get to the road, and that's in no one's budget. So it makes that kind of hard. The other thing we don't have is power to send to Cake. So if you build this line at 60 million plus, there isn't any surplus power to send to them. In your study, have you found a way to get surplus power to send to Cake? And I know Cake needs it, and they need it yesterday, but I don't know where it'll come from.
There's several options and several things going on. Metlakatla is moving forward with a couple small hydro projects. There's already an MOU's been signed between Metlakatla and Cake that they'll work together and try and take advantage of that power should Metlakatla be able to develop it. So that's one option for power. SEPA is looking at a couple different things too. They're looking at raising the Swan Lake Reservoir. They're trying to move ahead with that, and it's ongoing. And they also, and I can't remember all the right words, but they have gone out and advertised and asked people to bring projects to them. They've made a request for offers, and you know, they've sort of sent out to the world, you know, what can you develop? We want to buy more power. So there's a couple options in there that hopefully will bring more power, you know, so it's available for Cake. Right now there is a little bit of surplus at certain times of the year, and that surplus would definitely help Cake in turning off those diesel generators part of the time.
That's the other thing, because we're looking at between your cost, you know, depending which way you go, at, you know, $70 million plus 60 plus million for the road, plus probably another $30 million for the ferry terminals if they ever get built from one side to the other. You know, we're easily talking $200 million to, I know it's not the sole purpose, but to send power to Cake. Has your company looked at any other options that might be less than $200 million to get power to them?
All I'm involved in is
just
the inner tie.
Okay.
And I don't know the cost of the road. We're just involved in the inner tie, and SEEP is just involved in the inner tie.
Do you know if anyone's looking at that to get more inexpensive power faster to CAKE?
I actually have in my hand a newsletter that is a Department of Energy newsletter, and the there are some planning processes in place to look at different sources of power above and beyond this power line. They're not actually at a design phase yet, but they are looking at various options. So to answer your question, yes.
There are, that triggered something in my mind. CAKE itself is looking at some small hydro generation. And that's a possibility. There's some lakes up behind CAKE, and that's a possibility. They've talked about solar, and you know, so there's lots of options. And it might not be just one thing that solves the problem. Mm-hmm. It might be a little bit of hydro over the inner tie. It might be more efficient diesel generators, or it might be, you know, CAKE installing some small hydro.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions? Andy, would you like to? Could you answer any of Mr. Haverlick's questions on the road? And then we'll. You had some more. It doesn't seem like your question was answered.
My main concern was, you know, the $60 million for the road is just an initial shot.
Excuse me.
You know, as this gentleman just mentioned, construction costs going up 4 to 5% a year. So I know we're looking at more than that. And yeah, I know the state's plan is road ferry, road ferry. So you're really pushing that. But one, can we afford it? Two, we know we can't maintain it in the winter, you know, because we can't take care of our present roads. And we have a great crew here, but still, you just don't have the money. And three, would you build a road if you don't have the money to build the ferries to get us to the road? And that should be, what, about $30 million?
Well, first of all, as far as the overall project goes, the overall project obviously will include a ferry, a small ferry, and two ferry terminals. Think in terms of Ketchikan Airport ferry type, only smaller ferry. As far as cost estimates go, we don't have any current cost estimates at the moment. We've costed things out in the past, but when it comes to cost estimates, that's an exercise that we will be going through after we get through the purpose and need and alternatives assessment process. FHWA is just initiating the EIS process. We're just in the beginning of scoping and purpose and need statement formulation, and yet to come is the evaluation process of alternatives and costing them out. And in, I believe, a couple, 2-3 months, possibly as much as 4 months, we will be back with that kind of information. So it's just a little premature to throw out numbers, because at this point it would be guesstimates.
But you think you can get the money to do this?
At this point, yes, we do. Otherwise,
with
we would.
With the ferries?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And as far as I might address, as far as maintenance goes, we do not see, we wouldn't be going forward with any proposal if we didn't think we could maintain it year round. Our department has vast experience in maintaining roads throughout the state, from the Prudhoe Bay south, mm-hmm. and in southeast, probably our most challenging road is the Klondike Highway.
Okay.
So I think we're in a good position to come up with some very good, realistic estimates. But we're not there. We haven't had the time to do that yet. We intend to, and hopefully in the next 3 to 4 months, we'll have those answers for you.
I'm happy to know you're that flush.
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
If I may, the state draft transportation plan actually paints quite a different picture about your deferred maintenance backlog and your ability to attract federal money. And I'm curious to know how you think this road would rank on a priority list for funding for state and federal money, given that you've already identified you have a shortfall. And it's right on the web.
No, that's true.
Okay, any other question? Do you have a response to that?
Well, as far as funding goes,
mm-hmm.
At this point, that's the future will tell. We anticipate that funding will become tighter. In Southeast Alaska, our priorities are such that we feel that we can fit this project in.
Any more questions of Mr. Hughes? Okay, thank you. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Mr. Trafalis, do you have anything to add to this, or are you still with us?
Thank the Assembly for your comments on our draft purpose and need, and any other agencies and publics that are there in your audience tonight. We received some really well thought out, well written, articulate comments, and we appreciate that. And we are taking a lot of look at that and examining that right now to determine our best foot forward, how to move forward with the project.
Okay, thanks everybody for coming and giving this presentation, and I'm sure we'll be involved in the whole process. So, okay, I'll just
take a minute break.
You want to, what's that? Oh, sure. Okay, yeah, let's take a 5-minute break, and then Mark can pack up his stuff here. Mr. Shinman.
All right, we're at a 5-minute recess. I'll be back in just a few. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Petersburg Borough Assembly meeting live from the Assembly Chambers. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, providing knowledge, professionalism, and information on insurance issues, commercial or pleasure, boat and crew. Petersburg Insurance, offering asset protection on the water or at home.
Paradise put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charge the people $1.50 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please don't it always seem to go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? We paid paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
To order. Are you still with us, Kurt?
Yeah, he's there. Kurt?
Mr. Walhooter.
I'm here.
Oh, okay. Didn't mean to wake you up. Okay. Okay, we're item four on the agenda, approval of the minutes. There are no approval of the minutes. Yeah, amendment to tonight's meeting. Is there any amendments to tonight's meeting agenda?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Under assembly discussion item, put item B, the Rasmus Inge Memorial Bridge.
Okay. I'm a slow writer. All right, we'll do that. So we need approval of tonight's agenda if there's no more amendments. I entertain a motion for that.
I'll move. Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Loganakis, seconded by Member Flint. All those in favor of approving tonight's agenda, say aye.
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 Okay. Now we're on to public hearings and bid awards. We have two public hearings tonight. The first one is on Ordinance 2013-11, an ordinance providing for Chapter 3.18 of the Municipal Code entitled Finance Department, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation and providing for the dissolution of the Finance Committee for the city of Petersburg. Anybody in the audience want to comment on this? Okay. That public hearing is closed. And we're on to item B, and another public hearing on Ordinance 2013-12, an ordinance providing for Chapter 4.35 of the Municipal Code entitled Property Development Fund, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation and designating that funds from the sale or acquisition of state entitlement lands be deposited into or dispersed from the property development fund. Anybody in the audience have a comment on this? Okay, seeing none, that public hearing is closed. Is there any visitors' views related to tonight's agenda? Okay. Barry, you want to come up and...
Mr. Mayor, I'm just here to answer any questions that they come up on item
okay.
agenda item.
It's up here.
Okay. So we'll note that.
Right, thank you.
Mr. Beebe, would you like to comment on your... good night. Thanks.
Thank you. My name is David Beebe. I'm a city councilman and would like to respond to some of the issues and concerns that were raised by tonight's presentation. This is sort of off the top of my head, so bear with me as I try and recall a fairly extensive and very useful and productive and appreciated presentation. I would have to call into question if Commonwealth Associates is regarding themselves as independent and yet counting on, I think the term was betting on the Northern Route Road, that it does call into question the independence of this EIS. that's perhaps one of the most striking aspects of the presentation that leapt out at me tonight, as well as the fact that prior descriptions of this dual concurrent EIS process as being coordinated. And not to contradict Mr. Shinman, but I have an opposite anecdotal experience as a commercial fisherman who sees the city lights of Cake from many, many miles away. And it's always occurred to me that given the size of the community at night, that they can somehow afford to leave those lights burning when, I mean, we know what Main Street looks like here at night in the wee hours of the morning, and how those lights can be justified burning. So I wonder about whether or not the proper lighting for this out-of-town visitor is somehow connected with a very different perception coming from a commercial fisherman who sees lights burning when they probably aren't necessary. And I am also very delighted to see that the northern route of the intertie is going to be taking an underwater route, and however, as I have mentioned before, it still is sort of being bet upon the existence of the road, which sets into motion a whole other set of circumstances that are clearly, as Borough Member Lakadakis pointed out, inconsistent with the presentation's conclusions of an annual road maintenance schedule, you know, for a community of 550 with a community of 3,000. It's just, it's counterintuitive and at a minimum breeds cognitive dissonance. And lastly, I wonder if there will be alternatives that truly treat the Cake intertie as the possibility of having an option for alternative energy. Mr. Shinman didn't point out that there are also Cake wind power proposals being studied, and Sea Alaska Incorporated has also completed a study of the run of the river Cathedral Falls. And so there's, you know, a great deal of opportunities that also include conversion of diesel-generated electrical power to natural gas, which is what British Columbia has pulled off already for their ferry system, etc. So this is, you know, just a minor snapshot of some of the concerns that were raised by tonight's presentation. I thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Okay.
Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Beebe? Okay, thanks, Dave.
Okay.
Karen, did you have a... Please step to the microphone and state your name, please.
My name's Karen McCullough, and I just wanted to thank the borough assembly members, and also Barry Bracken, for all the work that you've done on the pesticide issue, and that you're continuing to do. This is the 20th, August 13th was the 20th year anniversary of the death of my husband at that time, Gary McCullough, who was an Agent Orange veteran. And I'm now a grandmother, and he's very cute. And it's really good to know that maybe we don't have to make some of the same mistakes all over again. So thank you.
Thanks. Okay, any more visitors' views related to the agenda this evening? Okay, seeing none. Any visitors' views unrelated to the agenda? Okay, seeing none of those, we'll move on to board, commission, and committee reports. There's none. No consent agenda, no reports of other officers, and it brings us to the mayor's report. And we're seeking letters of interest to fill a vacancy. The borough is seeking a letter of interest from interested residents to fill a vacancy on the hospital board. The appointee to the vacancy will serve until October 2014. We got an email from Bob King, legislative aide from Senator Begich, in regards to the Anna Kappa being moved from Petersburg. If they were going to build 154-foot cutters. It doesn't sound like the funding's available. It sounds like the Anna Kappa is going to be here, as far as he knew, for this time indefinitely. So that's good in my mind. And then we have an attorney's opinion on the uncompensated assistance from a borough assembly member. Attorney Brennan has his opinion is there's nothing inappropriate in the borough assembly delegating one of its members a particular task or tasks within the member's skills, so long as final decisions are reserved to the assembly. There's also nothing in the Alaska Rules of Professional Conduct that prohibits Assembly Member Hogue from providing legal assistance to the borough. There was one concern about insurance coverage, and that's the only thing that I saw that was sparked any concern for me. I think we should at this point just make a decision, since we're talking about it, whether the assembly would like Mr. Hogue to represent us in these issues. Is that or
Mr. Mayor?
Yes,
I would move that Mr. Hogue represent us on these issues.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Havlick, seconded by Member Flint, to let Mr. Hogue continue representing the borough without compensation, I guess you'd put in there, for I don't know how to word the rest of it, I guess, for help on grievances. Yeah. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
I just wondered, do you have that insurance that
no.
he was talking about?
No,
errors and omissions.
No, yeah. Because when I was did most of my practice in Oregon, we had mandatory insurance for the Oregon State Bar. Alaska does not have mandatory insurance. 80% plus of my work is for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. They provide insurance for all of those cases. I do very, very little besides that. I have, just for giggles, fired off two internet applications for malpractice insurance. When I went to the Alaska's family law section meeting in April, the one agent that showed up said, "We don't insure part-time lawyers." The humor is the applications I sent off today, the deductible that I would assume on any malpractice insurance would be far greater than the financial risk to the borough of any case I would handle. So in essence, I would be under any circumstance self-insuring my malpractice insurance.
Kathy, you have a comment?
I think because he is an elected official, he's going to be covered under the city's liability, just like any of your decision, well, because you're working on behalf of the body.
Member Lagadakis?
Although he wouldn't be working as an elected official in that capacity, you'd be working as...
No.
and so I don't know that that would be true. Are we talking, though, for the purpose of this vote, just for the grievances process and not beyond that, that we would discuss any further representation for the borough at a separate time?
Well, that's, I had that word. I guess that wasn't in Mr. Haverlick's motion. I'm in support of Mr. Hogue representing us for like the labor negotiations that he did with the IBEW. I know there's some concern from some of the employees from the borough, but I think he's doing a good job, and I know it's saving us a lot of money. And if he's more or less appointed to do this by the assembly, I would think he would be covered by, he's taking an action that the assembly asked him to do, and I would think he would be covered by the insurance. Do you see it that way, Kathy? You know more about it than me.
I do on that, because he's doing the work you're asking him to do, and the manager's asking him to do it. City, it's borough-related. It's not something out there that we're going out for independent counsel.
Well, if I can add for humor, on labor relations issues, which would be both grievance and negotiations, the humor is it's almost impossible for a lawyer to commit medical legal malpractice on those. The only way you could I've never heard of a legal malpractice case in a labor issue except for blowing a deadline. And since Steve and Kathy are responsible for the deadlines, I simply don't see it as an issue.
Member Strand?
It seems to me that if the city's insurance would cover any volunteer who was doing legal work for us, whether they were an assembly member or not, or if it would cover somebody who was not an assembly member, then it surely would cover somebody who was volunteering who also happened to be an assembly member.
Yeah, I might add, I volunteered a number of years ago with a prior city manager to when things were going particularly ugly, to provide assistance, and it was clear to me that A, he was uninterested, and B, frankly, I don't think he understood labor relations.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Main purpose, besides asking John to do this, which I really respect him taking the time to do it, was that on covering an insurance, if we voted through a motion that as a council to accept, to ask him to do this, that it seems like we would be covered.
That makes sense to me. Any more discussion on this issue? Member Lagadakis?
I'm just trying to clarify exactly what we're voting on. Are we only voting on him continuing on the work that he has already done to cover the grievance action, or are we saying in perpetuity he will, without any more discussion with the assembly, he would represent the borough?
John, are you volunteering in perpetuity?
As long as I'm comfortable with the direction of the borough, I will do the labor relations upon request.
Well, it seems to me like we're just voting on this particular situation.
We can bring it. Obviously, it's up to the manager, but labor relations are with PMEA are going to realistically start after the first of the year with a sophisticated wage and benefit survey to prepare. Mm. And in initial discussions with PMEA, they're going to be invited to give us input on benchmark classifications for which to do the survey on. This is, in essence, a dance has been ongoing for some time.
And I'm not debating that. I'm just trying to clarify what the motion is.
Well, maybe if I could restate it, that I move to request that Councillor Hogue assist us with labor relations, and that would include the grievances.
Does the second agree to that?
Sure.
Okay. So does that clarify what we're voting on, Member Lagadakis? Kurt, are you hearing all of this?
I'm here.
Okay. All right. So any more discussion? Will the clerk call the roll?
John Hogue.
Yes.
How'd you get first?
Kurt? Kurt?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you now. Cindy?
No.
John Haverlett?
Yes.
Mark Jensen?
Yes.
Sue?
Yes.
And Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, it passes 6-1. Okay, where are we now? We're on item D of the Mayor's Report. Mayor's letter to James Balsinger, National Marine Fisheries Service. Mayor Jensen's August 9th letter is in the agenda here. I won't go bother reading it. Expresses extreme disappointment in National Marine Fisheries Service unwillingness to take an active role in removing a very dangerous stellar sea lion from our harbors. The borough will continue to monitor the situation, but encourages residents and visitors to contact Mr. Balsinger's office in Juneau to express their concerns or for issues related to property damage or injury due to the animal. And I would also add to that, if anybody sees any activity in the harbor that seems dangerous by the sea lions, if they could contact the harbor master so she could document the incidences, then we could pass them along not only to Mr. Balsinger, but his assistant has called us, can't remember his name right now. John Kurland or something. And anyway, he has expressed interest to come to Petersburg and see the situation firsthand. So we might try to pick a date for that.
Mr. Mayor, I could comment for the harbor master that I would not have wanted to be putting an airplane on the float today. The sea lions were having a good time fighting with each other on the end of the airplane float.
Well, that's one to document then.
Yeah.
Okay, then item E, under the Mayor's Report, a work session reminder. The Hospital Board and Borough Assembly will conduct a joint work session on August 22nd at 9 a.m. in the Assembly Chambers. The work session will focus on finances of the hospital and how borough formation may affect hospital funding and governance. The public is invited to attend. Southeast Conference will be held in Sitka, September 17th through the 19th. Assembly members are asked to register and make their own reservations if they plan to attend this event. I won't be able to attend, but it sounds like Member Lagadakis is going to go. Is there anybody else going to go to Sitka? And now we're on to the manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The line crew has been working with ADOT clearing the right-of-way along the highway between 3 and 7 Mile. So see the guys out. New helicopter pad at the Crystal Lake Hatchery is complete and done, thanks to a lot of folks who were helped work on that. We're still monitoring the Rasmus Inge Bridge, replacing planks as needed. Chris is working on finalizing a material list that's going to include the decking, bull rails, handrails, and some stringers based on what we find when we get underneath it. And then ADOT did a kind of a quick pass-through, and we may have some pile caps and pilings that are also not good. So we'll see. It's going to be a work in progress. Chris and Carl are working with Dow HKM on plans for the Pump Station 1 Force Main project. Plans will be submitted to DOT for incorporation in the South Nordic repaving project, which is scheduled for next year. A ADEC grant application has been submitted to, hopefully if we get funded, it'll fund 70% of that. Otherwise, we're looking at probably using our loan funds for that. We're just kind of a heads up. We're having a little bit of a problem with the recycling drop-off behind the community cold storage. Most people use it correctly. We've had some people who have chosen to just dump stuff, which makes it really difficult when garbage is dropped into the recycle. Our guys have to manually either try to sort it or call it all garbage. And so if we can't get that figured out, we'll probably have to remove those recycling from that location to somewhere else that's better supervised. Scrap metal removal contractor, I think I said he's been delayed, but we just heard he's going to be in town this week. Carl's nodding, so I'm thinking that's good news. So we're closer to meeting our deadlines there. We're not sure how fast he'll be able to get start working, but we know he's contacted us. He's going to be here. Just as a heads up for the community, during the time frame that they're working up there and the dredge spoil hauling is taking place, there'll be no salvaging allowed in the landfill. We don't want extra people up there. Well, we've got basically 4,000 loads of dredge material going back and forth, heavy equipment spreading it, as well as the hauling off of the metal prior to that. So salvaging will be stopped during that period. Gun range improvements project is, for the most part, complete. We've got some punch list items, and we've got a hydro seed, the pistol range berm. And Reed Brothers did a great job on that. The Rod and Gun Club is working on finding a caretaker for the facility to keep an eye on it. Alaskan Industries has completed the gym floor. I think they finished the last coat Sunday, so we're just waiting for it to cure. Donnie will let us know when we can start using it again. Library shelving material. Again, an update from what's in my report. We got a notice today that the material has been completed and shipped. Mm. Now, I can tell you that I don't
trust it.
Yeah, well, what I didn't trust about it is that they finished it. It was going to be picked up today from their factory, which is on the East Coast, and they thought it would be in Petersburg this week. So that's my hesitation.
A lot of several checks, no doubt.
From your Nigerian friends.
But right. It is at least leaving their factory headed this direction, which is, again, that's good news. The Petersburg Library Art Committee has selected the artists for the new library. 20 proposals received from artists as far away as Washington State. And the selection process was a bit of a challenge due to a large number of very, very good, outstanding proposals. Public art in the new library is funded by local donors, and pieces will be installed through the fall and winter as the artists complete their work. The local committee members selected 9 local artists for the awards. They are Beth Floor, Polly Kieneman, Joe Vignicki, Susan Christensen, Russ Nanook III, Doris Olson, Polly Lee, Debbie McMahon, and Pia Riley. So Congratulations to all of them. Congratulations to Officer Ben King. He has successfully completed his field training, so he is on his own. We'll try to make Kelly's job a little easier. MRV, the architectural firm that the assembly awarded the structural analysis on a couple of buildings, they've received the agreement. They've actually got the work done, and they owe me a report that they're expecting probably end of this week to me. That kind of the first stage of evaluation. It appears that the Reed Marine Warehouse is not a viable candidate because of the modern standards. Basically, the building would have to be totally rebuilt. On the other hand, this building may still be on the table. They believe it's possible, if we can find a way to fit it, that this building could be retrofitted to work. Again, that's just on a conversation on the telephone. I do not have the report in front of me and would like to see it before I get too excited, but it's on its way. P&D, Western Dock and Bridge, Carl and Glow met with the Corps of Engineers in a pre-construction teleconference last week on the North Harbor. Everything seems to be coming together. The dredge contractor, I think Glow's been in contact with.
Contractor has left Seattle.
There we go. So kind of like our library shelving, they're on the way. Middle and South Harbor continue to be really full, and I stopped in a couple times. I encourage people not to get in their way, but to try to watch what the harbor folks and Glow have been doing to keep people happy, moving them away. I've not heard a single complaint. They may be complaining to Glow, but they're not talking to me. We are moving people around, and we're making it work, and that is a really large job. The contractor added a section of skiff float to the South Harbor that we're using as part of overflow. So we're somehow or other, they're making it work. So congratulations to them. Glow, Mark and I, and Brian and Julianne Curry all spent some time with Jay Stern. He is Senator Murkowski's new fish guy in infrastructure. Basically talked about some federal issues and upcoming projects that we'd love their help on. You know, he kind of cautioned us, the same old thing, earmarks are not going to happen. But made him aware of several big projects, the Anacapa being one, Sea Lions being another, and the Sea Lion issue as well. So they're on top of it. We got a pretty good feeling that he's at least visiting. He's got a bit of history with Petersburg. He worked for John Winther for 12 years, 15 years. So while this was his first visit to Petersburg, he's very familiar with our community from John's operation. And Hafter, God, how many years had he worked there? Hafter, excuse me, I'm sorry.
It's better part of almost 30, yeah. Probably 30 years.
He has announced his retirement effective August 31st. Oh. So if anybody sees him, tell Hafter congratulations. He's pretty excited and definitely deserves everyone's thanks for 30 years in the harbor.
He's been there as long as I can remember.
So, anyway.
Okay, unfinished business. Are you done, Steve? Any questions of the manager in his report before we move on? Okay.
When are you going to get rid of that cough?
Unfinished business. Juno appeal of the Petersburg Borough Boundaries. Oral argument will commence at 3 p.m. Wednesday, September 4th in Juneau. Judge Menendez has allotted only 1 hour total for all three parties to make their case. I'll be flying up there and sitting in on that with our borough mayor, or borough attorney, and we'll see how it goes, when they come up with their decision.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
It's my experience in oral arguments that the judges, especially on issues like this, do not really expect the parties to be there, and doesn't influence them much. So if you have other things to do, I would not recommend it be a mandatory trip.
Well, I bought the ticket today, and it was kind of recommended by our attorney. So
okay.
That's the reason I'm going. Otherwise,
yeah,
I've already spent a month in Juneau this summer. So
I thought you'd been up there for a while.
Brennan,
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he's coming from Warm Springs Bay.
A lot of places the judges in legal conferences have said do not introduce your clients.
I've never been to one.
Yeah. So, well, you have fun.
Yeah.
Just to add to it, the perception was coming from Juneau was that they were going to have a full house.
And I don't think.
Yeah. Jim was a little. He wanted
somebody
there that they, if asked, he could say yes, the mayor's here. But
okay.
Okay. So anyway, moving on. Redistricting. There's no new information. Unfinished business. Ordinance 2013-11, an ordinance providing for Chapter 3.18 of the Municipal Code entitled Finance Department, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation and providing for the dissolution of the Finance Committee for the City of Petersburg. Second reading. I entertain a motion to adopt Ordinance 2013-11 and its second reading.
So move. Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Flint. To adopt 2013-11 in that second reading. Any discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
John Ho.
Yes.
Sue.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
John Heverlich.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Passes 7-0. Okay, Ordinance 2013-12, an ordinance providing for Chapter 4.35 of the Municipal Code entitled Property Development Fund, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation and designating that funds from the sale or acquisition of state entitlement lands be deposited into or dispersed from the property development fund. This is the second reading. I entertain a motion to adopt Ordinance 2013-12.
So moved.
I'll second.
Moved by Member Strand, seconded by Member Logadakis to adopt Ordinance 2013-12 in the second reading. Any discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Sue.
Yes.
Cindy.
Yes.
John Ho.
Yes.
Nancy.
Yes.
Mark.
Yes.
John Heverlich.
Yes.
And Kurt.
Yes.
Passes 7-0. Okay. Under item E, authorization to send a reply to the July 9th letter from Michael Coffey, Department of Transportation, regarding the DOT's use of herbicide and pesticide applications in Petersburg. I don't feel it's necessary to read the whole letter. Has everybody read the letter on the assembly? And there's copies of it in the packets. The only thing I would think that could maybe change, and with Mr. Bracken, who's in the audience, was one of the people that drafted the letter. In the one, let me find it here, paragraph, it talks about the impact. It will definitely have an impact on people's willingness to buy Alaska Seafoods, and I would like to see that change to it may have an impact or it could have an impact. That seems like pretty strong wording, and Mr. Bracken didn't see any problem with it. Barry, would you like to talk to that? Let me find it in the
second to last paragraph.
Yeah, it is.
It's in the end.
Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, my name is Barry Bracken. I reside at 705 Sandy Beach Road. I have no problem with the mayor's recommendation, but I think something stronger than may be appropriate here. You could say something to the effect of, as such, it is likely that the public awareness and use of the will have a negative impact. I think may is kind of maybe a little bit too soft, and will definitely is probably too harsh, so somewhere in between.
Yeah, we don't know that it's definitely going to cause.
Yeah, but as such, it is likely that the public awareness of the use of these herbicides in or near Alaska waters will have a negative impact on the public's awareness, willingness to buy and consume Alaska seafood.
I think that wording would be acceptable.
Okay.
Since I'm signing it.
Thank you.
Can we change that, Kathy? And is that acceptable to the assembly?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So I guess we need a motion to move the letter, or just is everybody in favor of sending the letter as we've modified it? Just say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, Kathy, can we do that? Okay, try to make it less confusing. I'm trying to find myself here on the iPad again. Okay.
Item E.
Yeah, I'm working down the. I'm pretty slow with this. Okay, new business. Ordinance 2013-13, an ordinance providing for Title I of the Municipal Code, updating current language to reflect borough incorporation. It's the first reading.
I have a copy of it on my iPad.
The ordinance carries over the City of Petersburg code provisions to the borough code. It provides for matters regarding ordinance and resolution preparation, designates a general penalty and interest rate, limits claims against the borough to be filed within 1 year, and provides for records management. I entertain a motion to adopt 2013-13 in the first reading.
I so move.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Member Flint, seconded by Member Havlicek to adopt 2013-13 in its first reading. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
The, trying to find it, the statement that requiring notice before a lawsuit, I'm trying to find where that is because it's not on my iPad all of a sudden.
It's probably 30 days, not for a lawsuit, but for, I know what you're talking about, John. It's like asking for a refund or something like that.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't think legally we could make...
Yeah, no, it's not for a lawsuit.
Okay, I didn't think we could make that requirement. Good idea, but I think the legislature would have to do it.
Okay, any more discussion? Will the clerk call the roll?
Mark?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
John Havlicek?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
John Ho?
Yes.
And Sue?
Yes.
Okay, it passes in its first reading. That brings us on to item B under new business. It's resolution 2013-20. A resolution declaring Saturday, October 5th, as a sales tax-free day in Petersburg Borough. In Petersburg Borough, the Chamber Retail Committee is asking the Assembly to declare Saturday, October 5th, as a sales tax-free day in the borough. I entertain a motion to adopt resolution 2013-20.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved by Member Haverlick, seconded by Member Flint to adopt resolution 2013-20. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor,
yes.
I'd like to support this. We are ahead of our budget now this year with sales tax revenues, and October is a month where it's pretty much residents living in Petersburg or shopping in Petersburg, and I think it'd be a better time to have it than it was in May when we're full of visitors.
Okay. Member Stratton, you have a comment?
Did we ever get any figures from the from the merchants last year about how much they thought it increased their sales? Well, didn't we request that?
So. No.
I can't remember that we did, but didn't we find out that it was cost us less than we were assuming?
Cost us a little bit less, and we did ask the merchants if they had any information, but I don't believe they had the ability to tell us for the most part.
Yeah, that's my recollection.
Kathy, you have
Mr. Mayor,
input? Yes.
The chamber director called today and was sorry that they didn't have someone here representing the retail committee, but they were busy this weekend and no one could be here. But she said they have gotten some figures from a couple merchants, but they haven't turned them into us yet. But she wanted just to be aware that there is some info out there.
Member Flint?
I think the only request was when I asked Savannah Guthrie, who was here last time from the retail committee, if they had any information yet, and she said no at that time. So, but they definitely wanted to continue.
Yes. So, any more discussion on resolution 2013-20? Seeing none, will the clerk call the roll?
John Haverlick.
Yes.
Kurt.
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Sue?
Yes.
John Hogue?
No.
Cindy?
Yes.
Okay, that brings us to item C under new business, determination on the retention of advisory boards, committees, and commissions at the March 18th assembly meeting. Whether to retain or disband the various advisory boards and committees was tabled due to the lateness of the hour of the meeting. Borough Charter Section 19.08C reads, exempt for those provided for by this charter, all appointed and elected advisory boards, committees, and commissions in effect at the time of this charter shall be dissolved 1 year after the effective date of this charter, unless specifically continued by ordinance. A copy of the March 18th meeting minutes and a recap of the survey of the existing boards are attached for review. Doesn't show up on the iPad, but it's on the last page of our paper agenda. This doesn't, isn't this?
It does. It's just so tiny.
Yeah,
oh.
We can't read it yet. So, any ideas?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I had requested it be tabled previously because I thought if we were going to look at this, we should look at it one board at a time, let the department heads come in, give us a chance to look at, I would suggest, 6 months of minutes from some of these committees and make a decision committee by committee as opposed to doing an up and down in mass. Mm-hmm. And I'm as uncomfortable now as I am then considering it, you know, in mass on dealing with these committees.
Okay. Steve, you conducted the survey. You drafted it up and sent it out. Who was involved in answering the survey?
Actually, all we did was we went to each of the boards themselves and said, on the members, do you think your board should stay? Do you think it should go? What do you think the prime purpose of your board is? And so, yeah, very informal, but we did get all of them turn the response back to us, and across the board, they wanted to stay.
I see. You know, the boards as being important because it takes this level of, I don't know if you want to call it public involvement away from the assembly meetings, and they get a recommendation from the boards who hears all the public's comments beforehand, and then they give us a recommendation. We still have a opportunity to act on it. That's why I feel the boards are important. The finance committee is being voted on now is being removed, so one more reading there, it'll be disband. So,
Mr. Mayor, when I toured each of the departments when I was put on the council, I tried to have candid conversation with department heads and did they feel the input? Did they think they were valuable? And only one or two said yes when you asked candidly. I reviewed, for instance, 6 months of minutes on the Public Safety Advisory Committee, and it didn't strike me as that committee was important. And these are elected committees, and we have trouble finding people to go through that process, especially with APOC, which maybe we'll get rid of in a year. But I would suggest that before we just rubber stamp every one, that there be individualized consideration of those.
How many are there total after you get rid of the finances?
You could put them on one on each agenda meeting for the next, or two on at a time, and then have the department heads and some of the committee members come forward, and you could look at the minutes and see their usefulness.
Any other ideas on the boards and committees? Any other assembly members?
Only four are elected, three are appointed, but...
No, that's true. Yeah.
I thought the Public Safety Advisory Board was elected.
Yeah,
it is on the current status.
I'm sorry, Sue.
Yeah, the majority of them are elected.
Okay. Well, I have nothing against Member Hogue's suggestion of having a member or the chair of the advisory board of two advisory boards at a time, and if they affect department head, come to the assembly and hear if they recommend keeping them. I mean, that looks like we have plenty of time. Is this the next step in the process? Is that what
we can do that?
So we can start in September and we'll have them done in 2 months. So by the end of October,
maybe we don't even have to have, I mean, transient room tax.
Yeah,
they have one job a year, take that money and divvy it up. I mean, we want to keep that. We need to keep that committee. Right? And they're just appointed. So,
yeah.
I mean, we don't need to have special meeting on that.
So which ones do we think we need to have?
Harbor Advisory Board, I think, is very important in this town.
Yeah.
We shouldn't even have to worry about that one.
Highway Commission.
They are elected or appointed?
They're elected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you want to have a discussion on that issue, on whether they should be elected or appointed?
I don't, but maybe they do. I don't know.
It seems like that's one of the boards where you actually have a runoff for a seat.
That's so true.
Maybe an elected.
I've seen one board, I think, with one runoff. That was it.
Maybe. Or was there one of the hospital board or school board? I can't recall. So if there's some we think we don't have to have, like the transient room tax, we could just put a star by that, and then that one should stay. Can we come to a consensus on that?
If I may, that leaves you the Public Safety Advisory Board, Utility Advisory Board. I'll skip the Library Board because I have something to say about that. Motor Pool, Planning Commission, and Parks and Rec.
Planning Commission, you have to have by state statute.
Unless the Assembly wants to do it themselves, which I wouldn't recommend.
No. But I would suggest the other ones that we put on one or two at a time and go over them.
Do you want to talk? I mean, the Library Board is the other one that is exceptionally active.
Yes, that was the one department head that told me without any quibbling. Yes, they want that to come in. I don't think I asked Lowe because I assumed that the Harbor Board was going to stay there. But the Library Board is where I got an affirmative, yes, we want to be in existence.
It's up to the Assembly.
Mr. Mayor, I kind of agree with your original comment that the more public input we have, the better off we are. And I, except for the Finance Committee that we've already talked about, I would be very comfortable with just keeping all these boards. They've all said they want to stay, and uh, I would welcome more participation than less.
Well, I guess if we're going to take formal action tonight, we'd need a motion and a second, and we can have more discussion on it.
Okay. Well, I would like to make that motion that we keep all the committees that said they wanted to stay except for the Finance Committee.
Second.
Okay, it's been motion's been made by Member Havlick, seconded by Member Strand to keep all of the advisory boards that expressed interest in staying in effect. Any discussion? Which means, I guess we would keep, well, the historical review is not a currently active board, so that
we've
disbanded that, and if the Finance Committee gets voted out of existence at the first meeting in September, that would be gone, so that means we'd keep Parks and Recreation, Harbor Advisory Board, Motor Pool, Transient Room Tax, Public Library, Utility Advisory Board, and the Public Safety Advisory Board. Any more discussion?
Would we have a future discussion about whether or not they were going to be elected or appointed? Might we consider changing some of those, or are we going to retain them all as they are?
I think this current status, Steve, if I'm not mistaken, was that what the boards wanted or to be elected, or did they have an input in that?
Yeah, on the current status column, when I asked them, do they want to be elected or appointed, and the board size, that is what they told me.
So the APOC filing didn't discourage any, at least of the existing members?
At least from that perspective. So the only change in that was the Public Safety Advisory Board said that they thought it would be better if they were appointed rather than elected. They're currently elected, but that was the only difference.
Kathy, yes.
I just want to say it. This town, this borough, has more elected positions on its ballot than any other municipality in the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor.
That's including your big ones.
Yeah. Yes. You know, some of these boards came into existence, as I'm told the history of them, by people that were mayor on 20 years ago because of a distrust of the government. I mean, having a motor pool board is doing a function that should be done by the department heads and the city manager. I mean, the utility board, how much does it really do today? How much does it function? I mean, that's why I oppose Member Havlick. Let's just vote them all and continue the thing, because there are boards that, you know, their necessity and their contribution are questionable, making them go through an APOC filing. I mean, we have lost people that sat on this city council because of the APOC filing, mm-hmm. who contributed well, and it would strike to me that there is no rush to have this done without some discussion and consideration of this by one board at a time, and so I oppose Member Havlick's motion for that reason.
Okay. Any other input? I think my opinion is that we would have them come a couple at a time, and then we could address it then, whether they're elected or appointed, and how many members would be on the board, and some of those numbers could be changed. So I think I would be voting against Mr. Haverlick's motion at this point. Any more discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
John Haverlick.
I'm a coward, no.
You can't vote against you. Can you vote against your own motion?
Sure you can.
Oh.
We'll take it.
No.
Well, it's not that I'm a coward, but, you know, I mean, I think these advisory boards are real important, so I'm going to say yes. We should leave them as they are.
Sue?
No.
Nancy?
Yes.
Cindy?
No.
Mark?
No. Okay, the motion fails 4-2, so I would just a suggestion, maybe over the starting the first meeting in September, the borough clerk picks a couple of the utility boards advisory boards, committees, whatever you want to call them, to come before the assembly and with the department head, and then we get the information and we vote on them two at a time. Is that acceptable to the assembly? All those in all those in favor of that? I guess I can't make a motion.
Well, we'll just, it'll just happen.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Everybody say aye that wants that to happen.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay. Getting tired. Okay. Communications. Is there any communications? Just the phone call that I had. I guess I have a communication from John Curran, the assistant to Jim Balsiger from National Fisheries Service. He was the gentleman that would like to come to Petersburg and firsthand see the sea lion problem and be reported to if there's any incidences. So maybe the one that Mr. Hogue mentioned tonight, GLOW, he could get that information about you. Any more communications? Assembly discussion items. A, recognitions. Any recognitions this evening?
I have one.
Member Flint.
Well, I took my granddaughter up the river last week, and we were so pleased to pull into the Blackery Point parking lot with full parking for your trailers, lots of spaces to turn around, an outhouse, and a beautiful ramp, and it was such a breeze. And thank you to RAC and Rockin' Road Construction, Chris Cotta, and everyone else involved. Huge improvement.
It is, and I believe there's going to be picnic tables added to the site as well.
Can they get rid of the mosquitoes?
Yeah, they're still there.
Sure, they can spray. Get the state to spray pesticides.
Okay, we have one more item.
we have another.
Yes, date. Mr. Beebe.
I would like to extend my appreciation and recognition of the Harvard staff for having found my stolen skiff and allowed me to get underway in the closing fishing season. And they did this at the same time that they were fielding all of their numerous calls at the same time. We were actually found the video clip of the surveillance of the actual theft in progress. So I really appreciate that.
All right.
Good job,
Glow. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there was one item added under assembly discussion items by Member Wallhooter, the Rasmus Inge Bridge. So, Kurt, what did you want to talk about?
Well, I just want to run this up the flagpole here, Mark, just to kind of throw it out there. I mean, there's been a lot of things in this community that were built by volunteers, of, you know, like the old community gym, the old hospital, the Luther Church, Sunday Norway, you know, the boardwalk out to Sandy Beach. And I was just wondering if there would be maybe some sort of opportunity for community involvement in the Erasmus Rebuild Bridge project there, you know, kind of like a good old-fashioned barn raising. But I don't want to get into all the details because I know there's a lot of things here that, you know, that need to be considered. But I just thought I'd throw that out there, maybe just start people thinking about it.
Okay. Thanks, Kurt. I guess, Carl, can you take that into consideration? I don't know how that would work. It's a good idea, though. I don't know if we do any bartering or barn raising anymore, but
Mr. Mayor, it would be a very complicated process. It would be a lot of details to work out if we were to even try that.
If I may, Kurt, I don't know if you can hear me or not. The first step is, and we'll run this up the flagpole a little bit, all of the design piece has to be done by an engineer because we asked DOT has to rate that bridge. So that part of it we can't get out of. The question is, and we don't know an answer, is once the bridge design is there, are we allowed to use volunteer labor and still get the bridge rated by DOT so that we can drive on it? And it's, I don't know what they accept from a project standpoint, if it can be volunteer labor, if it has to be a licensed contractor. Carl and I had a quick conversation, but we have not yet called DOT to say, is this even possible? Would they allow us to do it and then still rate the bridge so we could drive on it? But we'll start asking some questions.
I knew it was going to be a real complicated situation here. I don't know. I was talking to our city historian there this morning, and we got to chuckle over the fact that when the old community gym was built, some of you remember that, the old Quonset hut looking at a gymnasium, it was designed by the school board and definitely donated the money to have it built by volunteers. And if you were destitute, you got $6 a day to help. So anyway, I just thought it would be just something that, you know, might be an opportunity there for a little community pride, because it is kind of an iconic landmark.
We don't even want to talk about state and federal wage and hour.
Okay, thanks, sir. Yeah. Mr. Havlick.
I just want us to keep an open mind that, you know, with an expense of possibly over $1 million, to that we may want to look at as just a walking bridge. Because, you know, like said last time, one business is moving out, and I know it makes, you know, Steve, you mentioned Sons of Norway, it makes an inconvenience, but to me, $1 million plus is a lot more of an inconvenience.
Okay.
Just to keep it open.
Yeah. All right. Any more discussion on this volunteer build the bridge idea?
We'll ask.
I mean, it's worth looking
we'll
into,
ask.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Doesn't hurt.
Okay, thanks, Kurt. The next item, adjourn. Anybody want to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay.
Aye.
All right. Good night, Kurt.
Petersburg Borough Assembly meetings are brought to you by KFSK and Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, helping clients find out how to protect any valuable asset, from stamp or teacup collections to houses, boats of all sizes, and everything in between. Plenty of information from the local agents is available at Petersburg Wrangell Insurance, 772-3858.